Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, the season is over. Rob Pelinka has spoken to the media, and so has Russell Westbrook. And man, was it fascinating. We'll break it all down next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. Andy, no matter how you get your podcasts, where you get your podcasts, whatever your favored platform might be, we always have fresh Lakers content out there for you, and we will never put it behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube, by the way, is where you can go to get all the updates, the news, breaking news, things like that, of which there will be plenty this offseason. And of course, you can get the podcast a little bit early as well. So that's a good place to do that. Everyone spoke to the media. Exit interviews on April 11th.
Yeah.
Everybody
other than Melo and Anthony Davis, who ultimately conducted theirs, it seemed like kind of impromptu, at least impromptu from our perspective, because we didn't get ahead.
Well, we didn't know.
right.
This was in Denver before Sunday's game.
Right.
In Denver.
It may not have been so much impromptu as we weren't invited. Right. But either way, AD.
By the way,
Melo,
I consider every party that I am not invited to impromptu.
Yeah. No, it just sounds nicer. But those were the only two guys that didn't end up speaking Monday in El Segundo. Otherwise, everybody on the team and Pelinka did the Zoom thing, or some people in El Segundo. But either way, like you said, Brian, lot of interesting nuggets to pick through for this show.
Yeah.
And for a lot of shows over the course of this week.
Oh, yeah. No, the format does not allow us, Andy, to finish all of this in one day, which is good because we got some off season to fill here. But Russell Westbrook, I think, was not surprisingly a central theme of all of the stuff that we saw on Monday, from finally the talk around Frank Vogel and why he was, some of the things he was ultimately dismissed over, and Rob Pelinka talking about that trade a little bit, and some of their transactions, to other players talking about Russ, to some of the stuff that Russ in a very long and very candid exit interview that he started to get into. So we're going to spend a lot of time on this show and subsequent ones, I'm sure, unpacking all of that. But we do want to get to a couple of the other things first. Rob Pelinka did speak to the media talking specifically about Frank Vogel's dismissal, which we'll get to in a second. But LeBron James, Andy, let it be known that he underwent an MRI on that injured ankle. And while it won't need surgery, he said that he was told that he really needs to stay off of it for about 4 to 6 weeks. And that the idea that he would have tried to chase a scoring title after the Lakers were out of the playoffs was, I believe he said, whack. He referred to it as whack as something. I forget exactly.
I believe it was whack as hell.
Yeah. So that I found really interesting because it was such a big talking point as to whether or not he would do it, if healthy enough, how Lakers fans would react. It turns out LeBron wasn't going to have no part of that anyway, particularly given the circumstances.
Well, there are also two. LeBron said that the game he played in against the Pelicans that the Lakers lost, and that was really the nail being placed in the coffin, if not all the way hammered shut. It's like
the hammer was like poised above, but yeah,
it was basically just over. It was a daily tap. Like, you're just pacing yourself. Like you're a carpenter that for some reason got paid a week's worth of time to put together this coffin. You're like, I could do this in 5 minutes, but you're going to keep me on the clock for a week. I'll do it. But what was interesting about that, though, was LeBron said that he really should not have played in that game against the Pelicans, and that it actually made his ankle worse. And, you know, it led to him having to be off it for like 4 to 6 weeks, but it also put to bed, and this is something you and I talked about last week, Brian, that idea that LeBron not only should have been playing in the rest of these games leading up to the Lakers getting eliminated from the play-in possibilities, but also could have done it. By LeBron's own admission, it was not necessarily the smartest thing in the world for him to be doing it at all, but just it reflected him wanting to be there. And I believe him that this was the case because neither one of us ever believed that he could have been playing in the first place.
It was obvious that he was in some pain, that he was not moving. I mean, you know, and when he re-injured it in that game, that it wasn't good. And just he is one of these guys whose track record on playing when he can is very strong. And so when he doesn't play, particularly in games that allow his team at least a shot to try to get the playoffs, I'm going to go ahead and give him the benefit of the doubt that it's because he can't. And so that was it. But the good news with LeBron in terms of the physical aspects of it is while he does have other doctor's appointments set up, you know, for the knee, for the abdomen, for all of these, I guess he has different specialists for all of these things. He does not expect to require any sort of off-season surgery. And particularly as you get older, being able to avoid surgery is a big deal. So good news for LeBron in the sense they'll have a lot of time to recover and theoretically should enter training camp perfectly healthy. Rob Pelinka spoke about Frank Vogel. I think that was probably the stuff that was most front of mind. He was asked a lot of questions, Andy, about the way it went down. If you missed it, Woj, of course, tweeting literally as the final buzzer sounds Sunday night in Denver that the Lakers would not be retaining Frank Vogel and would let him go as early as Monday, which is, of course, exactly what they did. And yet Rob Pelinka was, I mean, deeply offended, Andy, at this report and being asked about it. He said, "We do not respond to unsourced rumors and unsourced reports. Factually, Frank Vogel was told by me that he was being let go today."
Yeah, we will not dignify Adrian Wojnarowski's laying out of the future totally accurately. With a response. We're not going there. Like we are not going to get in the mud the way the Wojs and the Shamses and all those guys, you know, get in there. We're above it all. We are just going to let Woj's tweet that, again, was totally accurate and laid out the turn of events almost precisely as they did. We're just going to let that speak for itself, and you people can judge that trash the way you want to.
And it's so funny because it's like it's a bad look. I mean, we all get all that stuff, but like there were things that came later in this ultimately entirely too short press conference. We can talk about that perhaps before we move on. I don't think he spent nearly enough time answering questions, but broadly he mentioned himself first as the buck stops with me, and I am the final decision maker on basketball decisions and taking accountability for the roster, the personnel, and all that stuff. He was vague about what went wrong, what they plan on doing, and I didn't expect specific answers. But with this particular thing, it was not great damage control because he was remarkably defensive, I think, about the report. He was defensive about being asked about the report. And if the goal was to say, look, we try to treat our people a lot better than this, and this whole situation really sucked for Frank, and we feel bad about how this happened, that is not how it came off at all.
No.
Even if he didn't want to take responsibility for it, he still could have sounded at least like, geez, we feel terrible about how this happened.
Yeah, I mean, he could, even if he knows exactly how it happened, he could have said,
someone in my office talked about it with Woj.
Right. I mean, but without necessarily acknowledging that, because then it leads to the next question, well, who in the office was it? Why is that person still employed? All of that. Just could have said something to the effect of, not exactly sure how it happened, but that's not something that we like to see. And, you know, like you said, we felt bad about it with Frank. But sort of reinforcing how the whole thing was a clown show that Rob Pelinka had absolutely no right to be defensive about at all. Let's take a break.
Okay.
And then we will get to my point about the clown show element. We can get into a few other things that Rob said, and then we will break down some of the things Russ said, because obviously the biggest move that led to where the Lakers are right now, not the only one, but certainly the biggest move, was the acquisition of Russell Westbrook, and Rob Pelinka said full responsibility for it. So we will get to all of that next. But first, Locked On Lakers brought to you by Prize Picks. Laker fans, you've been hearing me talk about Prize Picks for months. If you have not signed up yet, you are missing out on daily fantasy made easy, because you're going to love this app for NBA and mixed sport pick'ems. And for a limited time, here's a no-brainer for all our listeners. Our users get $50 for free if your player in your first Prize Picks entry scores a single point, just 1 point. Pick a guy like Giannis or Joel Embiid, dudes who lead the league in scoring. You're going to win this thing, but you got to use the code NBA. That's right. It's an exclusive offer available just for Locked On fans who use the code NBA. Prize Picks has the best NBA DFS prop game on the market. Prize Picks offers more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator and offers all the superstar players as well as bench players that only record a handful of minutes each game. And they allow mixed sport pick'ems. This is the fun stuff. You could do the over on Joel Embiid with the under on Freddie Freeman home runs in the same entry. Use the award-winning app for both the App Store and Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's really easy. It's safe, fast withdrawals. So again, go to prizepicks.com today. Use the promo code NBA or go to the App Store, download the app. If you're not playing Prize Picks, you don't know what you're missing.
Locked On Lakers also brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net, Andy, it's your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all of the latest sports development, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs. Too soon, and the start of Major League Baseball season right there on betonline.net. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, again, too soon, esports, and more. Head to the website today. Use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action, including things like who's going to be the next Lakers head coach. They've got that action there at betonline.net. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Andy, you had another point that you wanted to make about Rob Pelinka and talking about, I think, Frank Vogel it was? Or
yeah, the idea that Rob Pelinka was getting so defensive about the report that Woj put out there, the tweet, and then he quickly followed up with a report on ESPN that, again, ended up completely accurate. It happens at this point. Frank Vogel is aware that he's going to get fired, even though he has not been spoken with yet. To quote Al Pacino in The Insider, cat totally out of the bag. Now the Lakers, if they are a well-run, forward-thinking organization, they're going to recognize, hey, we're not sure exactly when we wanted to talk with Frank Vogel about this, when we wanted to do it officially, but this is now in motion. We have exit interviews starting at 9 a.m. with LeBron James going up first, the franchise face, the guy that we always have to keep impressed with how we do business. Rather than, I don't know, hypothetically speaking, we have him talk before this is official so he can end up getting asked about it and say, well, nobody's told me about this one way or another, even though we know, LeBron knows.
Well, we all know. I mean, everybody knows, but LeBron can't confirm it unless they did tell him. And even if they did tell him, he still can't send LeBron out there to confirm it.
Right. So if you are a well-run, forward-thinking organization, if you are Rob Pelinka, you're going to get your ass to the airport for when the plane lands from Denver. You're going to meet Frank Vogel there. You're going to have this face-to-face. You're going to dismiss him. You're going to have your statement written up. It couldn't have taken that long. It was like 150 words. And you have that thing ready to go at 7 in the morning. So everybody knows officially what the damn score is. Mm-hmm. So you guys look like everybody's on the same page, and you don't put your franchise face in the position of having to pretend he doesn't know what's going on. That is something well-run organizations do.
You're talking about the Lane Kiffin move right there, right? You fire the guy on the tarmac?
Essentially, yeah.
But it's, you know, you're right. And the minute
the difference is, though, Lane Kiffin got fired in the middle of the season. This is the season's over.
And It's one of these things that once the thing was out, if it's what
you're
planning on doing.
Have him meet an El Segundo in the offices if that's more dignified somehow.
Can you do breakfast, Frank? You know, I mean, he's going to show
five
up.
5 in the morning breakfast.
We're not talking about 3 a.m., but like, hey, Frank, you know, FaceTime, you know, before he goes to bed or something. Right. It's out. We're going to do it now. We were going to talk to you tomorrow. It's out now. We're going to do it now. it's just as a reminder, this matters not because Frank Vogel is some precious flower who can't get fired and doesn't deserve it. And, you know, we can spend a little more time, you know, over the course of the week talking about what they're going to look for in another head coach. And I know you have an opinion, Andy, on whether or not he quote unquote lost the locker room, you know, the sort of proverbial expression there. Certainly his relationship with Russell Westbrook wasn't good ever. All of this stuff is relevant, but the reason this matters, if you're somebody listening and, you know, unsympathetic to Frank Vogel, is that it's not about Frank Vogel. It's about the next guy you want to hire. How you treat people, particularly if you want to get a coach that will be in demand, how you treat people matters. And it matters a lot. This is a small fraternity of people, the coaching fraternity. And you don't want to have a reputation of an organization that treats coaches poorly, that, you know, and they already have it. They have Kurt Rambis sitting in meetings, which is not something that coaches will normally tolerate. They, you know, shorted Frank Vogel on the years and the money of his contract. They did all this stuff. They've already got a bad rep. And now you pile this on top. That's why it matters. We'll talk more about what's coming with the coaching search, obviously, as the week and the off season continues. But let's talk about Russ, because I found his press conference, his exit interview, and I found the comments that people made about him it was just kind of a fascinating thing, from like a study in psychology. Russ made it abundantly clear that he never got along with Frank Vogel, that he never felt like he was given an opportunity to play in a way that would allow him to be his best and help the team in the way that Russ thinks that he could have. He did say that he didn't play as well as he wanted to. And it was just clear to me, listening to all this stuff, that everybody wildly misunderstood what this was going to be. That to me was the big overarching theme. What was your big starting point as a takeaway?
Well, I asked Russ directly about the idea of embracing change and adjustments, because this is something that I've talked about a lot with Russ, that I don't think he's done a particularly sincere job with, like a good job with it, but also really wrapping his arms around it. And I asked him directly, like, were you embracing this sort of stuff? Because there's a difference between embracing it and just a willingness, half-heartedly, whatever, to do it. And Russ seemed to understand why I was asking that. And he insisted that he always embraces change wherever he goes, and that he always does this.
He's never had a problem with coaches. Never. He basically made it sound like this was kind of the first time that he's had a coach that he just couldn't make it work with.
But what also though stood out to me, the dynamic between him and Vogel is definitely interesting in and of itself. But the idea that in Russ's mind, because I asked him afterwards, how do you define sacrifice? Mm-hmm. And he said that as a follow-up question to him, and he said that just anything that you do for the betterment of the team. And Russ actually said that him sacrificing is nothing new. It's something that he's always done and has always been asked of him. And he feels like has been asked of him more than other superstars. He said that he did it in Houston, said he did it in Washington, D.C., said it that he actually did it in Oklahoma City, presumably alongside Kevin Durant, because there were a few years where it was either all revolving around him or it clearly was not happening on behalf of Paul George.
Right.
But in Russ's mind, he's always been the guy to do that. And this all gets to the idea of how you define sacrifice and how you define doing less. Because on one hand, I looked up Russ's usage rating for this season, and it was the third lowest of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So by Russ standards, yeah, I guess you could say he was doing less and dialing things back. On the other hand, he had the second highest usage rating on this team. It's like a tick higher than AD's. and about 7 points higher than the next two guys behind him, Melo and Monk. So the reality is he's got the ball less than LeBron, but he oughta. And if Russ feels like that's unfair, then he's just straight up effing delusional. But he's doing a fair amount on this team anyway.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he, as much as Russ may have felt like often he was playing off ball and banished into a corner, which I promise nobody on this team wanted Russ spotting up in a corner. Like, he still was doing a lot. But when you are a star asked to do this stuff, it's always going to feel, I think, in a lot of ways, bigger than it may be in actuality over the course of a game.
Let's talk about that, because I think that's kind of the root of it. And when you ask him about sacrifice and you ask him about doing those things, I think Russ had a very, I don't think his answer was wrong. You know, when he talks about sacrificing for the team and you do things, whatever, you do what is required to help the team win, even if that takes you out of your comfort zone. I don't think he's wrong. The answer wasn't wrong. His interpretation of what he did in service of that, I think, was. And the reasoning for it is something I think is interesting. Let's talk about it next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models out there, it is impossible to stock all the parts you would need in a traditional chain storefront. And look, why would you spend 30%, 50%, 100% more at times for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or new car dealership? That's where they really get you, at the car dealership. Anyway, because, I mean, you can get it for far less at rockauto.com. For example, Honda Odyssey fuel pump, only $216 from rockauto.com. Go to a chain store, Brian, $353 on average, probably higher in certain areas, but $353 on average. Why would you do that? RockAuto.com, they're a family business. They've been serving auto part customers online for 20 years. So whether it's for a classic or a daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Go to RockAuto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
So, Westbrook gets out and he's answering your question about sacrifice, which was a great question. He talked a lot about comfort and adjustment. We mentioned, you know, his tension with Frank Vogel. There was a lot of reporting that, you know, from the jump, the idea of how Westbrook would play, Russ kind of rejected. Like, this, you know, they get into practice and Frank's like, anybody can bring the ball up, and Russ is like, I'm sorry, what? And, you know, AD even alluded to it, like, everybody has to change when you get into a group of superstars, and that was tough for Russ. And AD was there, nobody was trying to throw Russ under the bus, but it was, you know, when you talk about the sacrifice thing, this perception of what I'm doing versus what is actually happening, what I think, you know, you always make the joke, like, Kobe would talk about how he wanted to play more off ball, and he just literally considered any moment where he didn't have the ball being off ball.
Yeah. Like that's Kobe, you know, posting up and giving up the ball so he can repost
was him playing off ball. Right.
Right. That's Kobe playing off ball in his mind.
And so, like, we make that joke, but, like, you know, Russ, the critical moment, I think, in this exit interview was when Dan Wojcicki of the Times brought up the fact that, like, LeBron would talk a lot about, and he said it all the time, we got to let Russ be Russ. And Russ said, but we know that's not true, you know, to be honest, like, that didn't happen. And in Russ's mind, he was never allowed to do to be himself, which means play in exactly the way that Russell Westbrook has always played and always wants to play. And so he feels like he's sacrificing. He feels like he's doing something that's different. And he, to some degree, I guess, is. But he doesn't believe that fundamentally it's what's going to help the team win, because it doesn't allow him to be kind of the fully formed version of himself. And, you know, we've had this long debate kind of about what is at the root of all this stuff. And to me, this kind of confirmed, like, he is just wired in a place where if he can't, there is no plan B. There's no other way. It is Russ. And I got a Russ or Russ even harder, or something isn't allowing me to play right. And I would love Andy to have been there the exact moment that LeBron realized that this wasn't going to work, that they all completely in good faith, Russ, Anthony Davis, Rob Pelinka, LeBron James. I don't think anybody was lying. I think they were delusional. They got into this thing and they must have known within two practices, oh my bleep, we have bleeped up. Like this isn't going to work. Like we completely, and that to me was the thing is, this stuff is so hard. It is so hard to understand and actually make these changes for players who are all superstars. When they're also Dwight, he made the adjustment, had to be run out of the league to do it. Carmelo had to be run out of the league to do it, or Dwight nearly run out of the league. Like, you know, Stanley Johnson, I asked him about this kind of concept, had to be run out of the league to do it.
Because he's a former lottery pick for people who aren't aware. He was, I think, seventh or eighth overall pick for the Pistons.
And, you know, I mean, just, I mean, God, sidelight. If you haven't had a chance, go back and listen to his exit interview. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody understood what this really was going to be. I think they were all incredibly naive, even accepting that they were all acting in good faith.
Well, and what further complicates all this, and this was a big, big theme for Russ. I mean, it's something that's come up over the course of the season, something that's come up over the course of his career, but really came up in this interview was the idea of feeling misperceived, like that there is a bad, false narrative about him, that he's always fighting, always having to defend himself against, always, you know, having to correct the record that's being put out there falsely. And this, I think, in Russ's mind, feeds into a lot of this, the idea that he is not willing to play ball in the way of what is being asked of him. And put aside for a second whether or not he actually is or isn't. I'm just talking about his perspective and what creates his psychology. He feels like somebody, Russell Westbrook, that is always on the defensive about who he is as a player, who he is as a person. It was very pointed that he said that he felt like he never got a fair chance in this situation to really be himself, really show who he can be on and off the court. And he, as he put it, top to bottom. And, you know, that's reflected in what happened on the court. I think it's reflected in the way that he didn't feel totally connected to the organization in the way that he has with other ones, certainly Oklahoma City, where by all accounts, he had total run of the place. And I think did a lot of good things with run of the place when it came to entrenching himself in the community, stuff like that. But then, you know, you just start.
Yeah, I mean, this is all divorced from nobody, at least on our podcast, is claiming that Russell Westbrook is a bad human being, because, and I think, you know, he reached that place where, you know, when you are playing poorly and you know you're playing poorly, but you're kind of, your guard is up and you're defensive about it, you start going to, but I'm being a dad is more important, being a good member of the community is more important. Like all of which are objectively true, like from a humanity standpoint, but also not really why.
It's got nothing to do with this.
Right. It's not why we're having this conversation. It's like, and so, but yeah, I mean, I just thought that stuck out, like, to what you're saying.
But then it all starts becoming super, super personal.
Yes.
For Russ. And this was something I talked about last week, about how I feel like for all of Russ's competitiveness, and that's there, he is actually more wired to be combative than competitive, or that whatever competitiveness he has is always rooted in something personal. And that is what fuels it. And I think in a lot of ways can be destructive for Russ. But he, and swinging this back to Vogel, and the reason I even mentioned this is he talked about, in terms of his relationship with Frank Vogel never really working out, that when he first was traded to the organization, it was right around the time that Frank Vogel was having his anniversary. And he sent a bottle of champagne to the Vogels as a way of, you know, helping them celebrate their anniversary, saying, you know, happy for you guys. But I think also sort of ingratiating himself.
Hey, I'm the new guy. Right. Gesture of right.
So in Russ's mind, like, this is the starting point where he's looking to do the right things. And for reasons that he, if nothing else, claims to not fully understand. And again, put aside whether or not you think they're completely effing obvious and Russ is an obstinate fool or just fooling himself or lying to himself that he doesn't understand why. When he knows that he made the initiative, he made the gesture at that point, and then from there, it feels like Frank Vogel doesn't like anything that he's doing, it's going to start feeling even more personal from his perspective. And it just keeps feeding onto itself.
Yeah. And it was a theme, and we'll keep going this during the week. But, you know, it's just, I keep coming back to this place, and maybe, you know, I'd love to hear comments from listeners and viewers on the YouTube channel. Like, what do you think was at the source of this? I just feel like nobody was willing to either recognize what this was going to be, or didn't have the foresight or didn't have the sort of fortitude to stop it. And blame goes everywhere. And it sounded like people knew that they were in trouble early. This was not something that popped up in, you know, November or December as the injury. Like, they knew they was going to be a problem early. And so nobody had fun. That was the other, like, nobody, like, Dwight Howard was talking about the wall and like all the, nobody had a fun year this year. We're going to keep talking about it. We'll get more into Frank Vogel. We'll get more into replacements, what the organization is looking for in the next coach. We'll try to do some scouting of some of the names on these lists, and more Russ, because getting to the bottom of the whole Russ thing is key, Andy, I think, to understanding how they're going to fix the roster going forward.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what you're going to do with Russ moving forward. And, you know, he would not even on the record confirm whether or not he's going to pick up his player option.
Right. Which, and there are technically reasons that, you know, I'm allowed a lot, but Kendrick Nunn was like, oh yeah, I'm doing that.
Yeah.
There's Kendrick, not a human being on the planet who thinks that Russell Westbrook's not picking up that option.
No, I love Kendrick Nunn. It, when asked about it, he said, well, I didn't play the whole year. So yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do that. Russell Westbrook's going to be paid $47 million next year. He's going to pick up that option. The Lakers got to figure out what to do. Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to us however you get your podcasts. Thanks again to everybody for going through this season, and we're looking forward to bringing everybody through the off season as well. Make sure you leave comments in the comment section on YouTube and also on our iTunes page so we can involve you in the show. We'll see everybody on Wednesday.